Warman Olney back with Which Way LA. LA's homeless population has increased by 12% in the past 2 years. That's according to the Homeless Services Authority. The City Council has established an ad hoc committee on homelessness, which will hold its first meeting tomorrow. Meantime, the Council has tentatively approved two new ordinances, making it easier for authorities to break up encampments and also harder for homeless people to keep track of their possessions. Jose Huizar represents the 14th Council District, which has more homeless people than any other. He is also chair of that new ad hoc committee on homelessness. Councilman, welcome as always to our program.
Thank you for having me.
The new ordinances, tentatively adopted, would reduce the time that people have to secure their possessions from 72 hours to 24 hours before their stuff gets hauled away. How does that help the homeless?
Well, it helps all of us because right now we have more encampments throughout the city, unlike any other time. This is part of, for several reasons. Number one is the injunction we had in some litigation in terms of our Ordinance 56.11, which allowed us to clear public rights away. We have been slower to do that because of this injunction, and now we're cleaning it up. We're adding some better and clear guidelines for people out there to clean up a public rights of way. So that shorter notice allows the city to clean up these encampments sooner. But what we're trying to do differently as well is to put outreach crews out there that prior to cleaning up encampments, we have people out there asking, social workers asking if homeless individuals need assistance. It's part of an expansion of what we've been doing in with something called Operation Healthy Streets in Skid Row, where we expanded it the last few years under my office's direction. And we have more social workers out there helping people when we're cleaning up encampments.
One very disturbing figure is that chronic homelessness, that's people who've been homeless for two or more years, is up by 40%. What can the outreach crews do for them?
Yeah. Well, first of all, let me say that the city has had no plan on how to handle homelessness. There's very little coordination between the city, the county, and service providers. I've only represented the Skid Row area in the last 2 years, and in my involvement, my increased involvement in this issue, that's when we started Operation Healthy Streets, that for the first time ever, we're cleaning these streets monthly with social service providers, et cetera. But one thing is clear, that it is a situation that's getting worse. Part of it is that we're getting out of the recession, and also affordability of housing. And we've got to do more to not only go on the street where people are, ask them if they need help, and it's something we're doing. So part of this ordinance that we changed yesterday in council goes hand in hand with increased funding to LASA, which is the countywide service organization, to do more outreach. And also we put some more money into sanitation crews to clean up more often. Now, we're far from getting a better handle on this. We do not like to be labeled as the homeless capital of the country. And the fact of the matter is that that's why we created this homeless committee, because we want to do more about it. And this homeless committee, what we hope to accomplish is in the next 6 months, come up with a strategic plan for the city as to how to better deal with homelessness. Right now, we have no policy. Our policy is reactionary to litigation we're involved with. And we got to be proactive, and we got to coordinate better with the county and service providers and do those things at work. Better, more permanent supportive housing on a decentralized level, and be out there more at the street with outreach teams.
Let me introduce Deborah Lechever, who works with homeless people in the Venice area. Welcome to our program. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Before we get to the long-range issues, what about reducing the time that people have to pick up their possessions from 72 hours down to 24? What's been the reaction to that of people you work with?
Well, one thing is the city does not have the resources to deal with that much property. That's been shown to be true. There's not enough place to put it for the 90-day hold. There aren't enough voluntary storage units to help the people on the street. And what we're seeing is instead of working on the solutions first and then dealing with the laws against what they're doing, what they're doing first is they're criminalizing them and thinking, oh, you know, we should have some solutions around here. That's a great idea. But they're not waiting until the solutions are in place. In fact, they're criminalizing the homeless people in the first place rather than the second place.
How does it criminalize people if you reduce the amount of time they have to pick up their property?
Well, the homeless people don't have any place to put their personal possessions. That is medication, that's personal paperwork that they must have for all the things that they need to do. It's sleeping bags, it's a change of clothes, it's maybe pet food and dishes for dogs and, you know, whatever else that we just take for granted. They have nowhere to put their things. So it's really cruel to remove all their things without giving them a place, an option for them to have a storage for those things.
Here is a woman named Shanti, whom we talked about, describing her experience using a free storage facility in Venice.
I'm a woman, I'm over 50 years old, and I'm living on the street. It's not healthy, because I have artwork and I have things that are sacred to me, and my children's keepsakes and whatever, you know, paperwork. This saves my life.
So back to Councilman Huizar, what about the reduction in the amount of time that she and others would have if it was decided that their material needed to be confiscated? Are you, as Deborah LeChevre suggests, sort of getting ahead of the issue here if you're finding solutions before and criminalizing homelessness?
Yeah, well, I think the city is so far behind in addressing the issues of homelessness that we're starting on both ends. We're going to start doing some long-term planning at the same time, correcting some immediate things. And those immediate things are the encampments that have popped up all over the city now in places you've never seen them before because the city's doing nothing to address them. And we've got to do something about that. So, and she's correct. We do not have sufficient voluntary storage, and we hope to address that through this committee and as one of the priorities. Some of us on council were hoping not to move on this ordinance until we found a solution to the voluntary storage so people could store their items. But I think it's written into the ordinance that should the city not have sufficient storage, they have more time for after notice is given to pick up their items. So we're aware of that, and it is something that we're working on to get more voluntary storage for people who put their items in should they need it.
One council member voted against these new ordinances, Gil Cedillo. We asked him to come on our program. He said he wasn't available, but he said, as did Deborah LeChevre, that this simply perpetuates criminalization of homelessness. He says that's a failed strategy. He says we spend $100 million on it now, 85% of which goes to law enforcement. That tells us our strategy is not working. Councilman Huizar, do you agree with that?
It is. That strategy is not working. For some time, we invested a lot of money into the Safer Cities Initiative, which had some immediate good impact in terms of trying to separate criminals on the streets in Skid Row from individuals who truly need the help. But now that can't be our only strategy. And what this ordinance does, it does have a provision, which I would guess to say a majority of the council members, not only Mr. Cedillo, did not feel comfortable with. And so that is a portion, that portion of the ordinance is going to committee for us to come back with something that takes out the criminalization of people being cited for leaving their items longer than 24 hours on the public rights of way.
Let me introduce another person who works on a daily basis with homeless people, and that's Dion Joseph. He is senior lead officer for the LAPD on Skid Row. He has worked that beat for nearly 20 years. Officer Joseph, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You are described by people who work with homeless people on Skid Row as a very unusual member of the LAPD, somebody who has a lot of compassion and who tries to help people. Have you noticed that the situation there has gotten more intense, more concentrated than it used to be?
Absolutely. One of the things I always say here is that the Safer Cities Initiative failed. The Safer Cities Initiative didn't fail. It was sabotaged. And that's unfortunate. From 2006 to 2010, we saved lives and we improved the quality of life, and people were beginning to choose the programs instead of the streets. The issues with the tent, being homeless is not a crime. Being mentally ill is not a crime. But when you have Crips and Bloods and you have homeless addicts who are willing to participate in the detriment or the stymieing of the recovery of people in a recovery zone, it drives violence. It drives the storage of narcotics and weapons. The tents in Skid Row are different than anywhere else in the city. I can only speak for Skid Row working 17 years. And inside many of these tents, we've recovered weapons. We've recovered narcotics. We have gang members from the South End who come into Skid Row and pretend to be homeless or provide tents to the homeless for the sake of forcing them to sell narcotics. And it drives our crime. I always say that if you're against human trafficking and drug dealing near drug programs, then you have to be against the tents being up during the daytime, because that's what's happening in Skid Row. I can't speak for Venice or anywhere else. But
how did that get sabotaged?
Well, unfortunately, through litigation, there's lawsuits and things, and we can't cry about that. We just have to find a way to work within it to keep these people safe. But, you know, our hands are tied, and also storage is the issue, as the councilman stated. It's a huge issue if we don't have a place to store it, you know. But we haven't been attacking the issue over the last few years with enforcement. It's more or less been through warnings and outreach, and I have to commend the councilman on stepping forward and infusing Operation Healthy Streets with more of a proactive outreach approach to this situation. But in the end, as the more we've warned, the more pervasive the problem has become. And our crime, one time I came back from a couple of days off, and in 1 week we had 32 crimes in 1 week in Skid Row. That hasn't happened since 2005.
What's the nature of the crimes?
Violent crimes, stabbings, robberies, robberies over drug debts. Something as simple as a crack pipe can get you stabbed in Skid Row.
And you have trouble enforcing the law against those things?
Not against crack dealing and all those things per se, but the tents being up give the criminal element cover so that we can't see what's going on, and we end up having to be an after-the-fact entity. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I do understand what you're saying. Let me go back to Deborah Lechevre, the homeless activist in Venice. Do you find that's the case there? Did the Safer Cities initiative help, and have things gotten more difficult since?
I have not seen any help with the Safer Cities initiative. All I've seen is more and more ticketing for infractions like smoking or sitting on the sidewalk or sleeping on the beach, things like that. I haven't seen any, you know, there's no rise in crime. We don't have tents up with weapons and prostitution or whatever he was talking about. I have no knowledge of anything like that going on in Venice whatsoever. The problem is the people need to have their personal possessions. I don't think tents should be up all day long every day. That's not what this motion talks about. This motion talks about personal possessions, taking them away from the people. We have a sweep every single week in Venice. The Councilman Bonham is spending $500,000. That's $500,000 on these sweeps. But yet we have no voluntary storage in Venice at all. And that's just cruel for the people that are not criminals, for the people that are just trying to survive on the street. And there are many, many more of those than the criminal element, of course.
I think we can stipulate that there's a big difference between Venice and Skid Row. But Officer Joseph, what about the issue of needing their possessions, such as we heard earlier, identification papers, medications, things of that kind? Are they likely to get swept up if they have only 24 hours to reclaim their possessions before they're moved?
No, we're not trying to throw away people's property. That's not on our end what our goal is. Obviously, personal possessions that are very important to them, like paperwork, documents, laptops, and things of that nature, we want them to keep. And those things can be stored in backpacks and in shopping carts and things like that, where they don't completely block the sidewalk. I mean, if you ever come to Skid Row, you'll see people in wheelchairs who are forced to ride and roll around in the street, and they can't use the sidewalks because a lot of these individuals have completely taken over the sidewalk where people can't use it. So those are and the collected garbage. Unfortunately, as long as Skid Row looks like a city dump, there are going to be people who come from outside of Skid Row and say, hey, I can get rid of my office chair on my couch. And you'll see them being thrown into the street, and then the homeless will sleep to collect them. And once again, it gives cover and more of a foothold for the criminal element. I'm not speaking about Venice, so I hope that the young lady was not thinking I was talking about. I don't know about Venice.
I understand. You made that clear, No doubt, things are very different. I want to go back to Councilman Wiesar on that point. Are there going to be different levels of enforcement, different targets of enforcement, depending on different neighborhoods? Because now homeless people are pervasive around the city, a big difference between downtown, where your council district is, and Venice.
Well, as you know, our officers have great discretion out on the street as they do their job. And for us, we want to be able to say that we minimize any of this to elevate to a misdemeanor, which is how it's currently written. A majority of council members yesterday expressed a desire to reduce that to infraction should there be continuous violations of the ordinance. And so we're trying to get away from that. But as far as different levels of enforcement throughout the city, what we do need to do is to provide adequate voluntary storage throughout the city. Right now, Skid Row is just now catching up to provide sufficient storage units, and we need to provide that on a citywide basis. And again, this is, I think, the beginning of the city paying a whole lot more attention and focus on this issue, which it has neglected for many years. I commend Officer Dean Joseph for being out there for the tremendous work he's doing. He's like a one-man band out there doing the work that the city should have been doing for a very long time.
Let me go back quickly, if I may. We're almost out of time, to Deborah LeChevre. Are people in Venice, where there's been a lot of complaining and concern about the increase in homelessness, are they going to be happy to see a lot of new storage facilities around on the beach?
We don't need that much space. We could do with about 300 of those 60-gallon containers. LAUSD has offered for free a bungalow, which would suffice. There's also places in Venice where we could put that bungalow. There's also the senior center, which is totally unused and the perfect place for this. We just need the political will of our councilman. He's just brushing this issue aside so far. Hopefully, because he's on the Homeless Ad Hoc Committee, we will see some more action from him. But so far, it's been pretty disappointing.
All right. Councilman Bonin, we don't have him on our program. He doesn't have an opportunity to respond to that. But hopefully, in future programs, we'll be able to give him a chance. Thank you all for being with us. Deborah LeChevre, again, an activist with homeless people working in Venice. Dion Joseph, senior lead officer for the LAPD on Skid Row, and Jose Huizar, city councilman for the 14th District, now chair of the Ad Hoc Committee on Homelessness. Thank you all.
Thank you.
In a moment, portraits of unsuspecting drivers at stoplights provide a bigger picture of LA's car culture on Which Way LA.
Subscribe to the Which Way LA podcast at kcrw.com or download the KCRW app, available anywhere podcasts are found and on all mobile devices.
We're on Only Back with Which Way LA. There is a photographer in Los Angeles roaming the streets with two cars. One is for taking pictures and the other is for lighting. The result? A series of some 800 portraits of drivers and what the photographer calls those introspective moments we all have in our cars. Jonathan Castillo and his project were profiled recently in Wired magazine, and he joins us now. Jonathan, welcome to our program.
Welcome, Warren. Thanks for having me.
You said in Wired magazine, this is all about car culture. What is it? What do you mean?
Well, culture is learned patterns and behaviors. It's like the way anthropologists look at it, and this is something that's a learned pattern of behavior that we all participate in the LA culture. You know, that's the only way you can get to and from work. You know, if you live in Long Beach and you work in Irvine, you know, you got to spend an hour a day on the 405, you know, or you live in the San Fernando Valley and you live on and you work on the West Side, you got to come over that hill. So it's part of the culture of living in Los Angeles for most people.
You talked about freeways, but the pictures are of people at stoplights.
Well, it's all on the streets as well. I mean, you start on the streets and get on the freeway, get off, get on the streets again. You know, I do them at stoplights because that's sort of the only way I could sort of control the situation and get those photographs. I can use that lighting and get the kind of moment that I'm looking for.
I'll tell people how to get a look at them for themselves in a moment, but tell us why it takes two cars to do this.
Well, in the car I drive, I have my camera mounted to a tripod that looks out the back window. The window flips open on my car, and people pull up behind me at stoplights, and the people that pull up behind me are my subjects. And next to me in the next car, I have another car that has a flash that's triggered by my camera when I trigger the camera, and that illuminates the inside of the car so that I can photograph not only the people in the cars, but the space around them and balance the light between the outside of the car and the inside of the car.
And you're able to do that without flashing the lights in their eyes?
Well, we're stopped, and if someone turns and looks towards the light, they might look right at the light and flash. But in the middle of the day, when your eyes are adjusted to daylight, a flash from a camera isn't going to blind you. You know, if you were in the middle of darkness and I turned a full power flash off, it would be a little jarring. But in the middle of the day, it's really not a big deal. And most people don't even realize I'm photographing them. I'd say 90% of the people might see the flash and they kind of look around like they weren't really sure what happened. And then I just move on. I take one photograph and I move on.
So tell us what you get as a result. How would you describe the pictures? What are your favorites?
Well, some of my favorites are when there's groups of people in the car, and I sort of get these interactions between people or non-interactions between people that I really enjoy. Like I have one in particular where there's this black Mercedes going down the street in the jewelry district in downtown, and my light is, you know, lighting the side of the driver, and some of the light is spilled past the driver and hitting the passenger. There's a little triangular strip of light across her face, and they're both wearing sunglasses in this black Mercedes, and some of the light even goes past their car and hits a MTA, you know, local bus, and you can get a little hint of the people that are in the bus. So the light allows you to have a little hint of the occupants of the vehicles, because otherwise, if you look at the surrounding cars, they're just dark. They're just dark inside. There's these little dark bubbles that everyone hides in when they drive around on the streets. And, you know, there's other things that are really interesting. Like, if you look at that particular image, there's these distorted reflections of the high-rises in the skyline, in the hood of the car, and, you know, things like that kind of really, really speak to me.
This is a visual art, and people can decide how it speaks to them in their own ways. But how would you describe what you learn about the patterns and behaviors of people in this activity we all participate in?
I don't know if I'd say I'm learning so much about them as if it's. I mean, it's definitely a study of people and their cars. But I mean, we all know it. We do it ourselves. But I think I'm more. I think when you look at these people, it's like any other street photography. It's about the people and the place and the time. It's a document of our culture at that moment. You know, that's really sort of how I see them.
So what happens when they do notice? Have you had anybody who resisted the idea of having their picture taken while they were sitting there in the car?
Yeah, I've had one or two people get, like, noticeably upset, and I ended up not using those particular photos anyway. But most people don't notice. I've had one or two people roll up alongside me and ask me, did you take my picture? And I go, yeah, it's an art project. And they go, oh, that's cool. And where can I see it? You know, I get all kinds of reactions. But most of it is, you know, people don't notice, or the ones that do, you know, once, you know, sometimes I get people interacting back. They see the camera or the flash goes off and they think it's really funny and they start making faces or something. But I take one photograph when I drive off. I'm not really interested in getting people sort of performing for the camera.
Anybody get mad, demand privacy?
Yeah, I had one or two.
What do you say?
Well, in those particular cases, the photographs I wasn't going to use anyway. But I mean, if it came down to a photograph that was just, you know, I just looked at it and realized it was one of the better ones I was going to make, I'd have to make a decision at that moment whether I was going to use it or not. But I mean, I'm within my rights to take the photograph and to use it if I want without their permission.
And the nose pickers, what do you do about them?
I haven't really had any like that.
You haven't? Would you use them if you did?
No, that's not the kind of thing I'm interested in. I'm not really interested in trying to find, you know, awkward, weird moments or, like, make people look bad. I mean, I like a little bit of humor in some of the images.
What's the funniest one you can remember?
The one I have that everyone really likes is there's a green Volkswagen Bug, and there's this this middle-aged woman smoking a cigarette with these dark sunglasses on, and the back seat is filled entirely with balloons. It's just this odd picture.
You know. And she's smoking.
Yeah, smoking a cigarette, just, you know, looking off to the side. You know.
Okay, there they are, documents of the moment, and you can see them. We'll have them on our Facebook page. We'll have a link to Jonathan's website there. Jonathan Castillo, his series is called Car Culture. And Jonathan, thanks a lot for being on our program.
Thank you very much, Warren.
Once again, that link is at kcrw.com/WhichWayLA. Remember, you can join the conversation on our Which Way LA Facebook page. In a moment, what's the future of free trade with countries in the Pacific? On To the Point.